Welcome to Layers, a podcast about style and how we get dressed, with Anna Kinsler and me, Stevie Mackenzie Smith. This episode's theme is conviction. Stevie, what item of clothing do you feel that you can't pull off?
I suppose that I don't feel like I can pull something off if it isn't authentic to me. I'm not really one to like play a trend if my heart's not in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about the, you know, like the whole off the shoulder trend that was quite big last summer. That's really not something I feel like I could pull off.
And do you feel that it doesn't look good on you, or that you're not comfortable in it?
It's about not being comfortable. And I think like being hyper self-conscious. And I think that's usually when I won't wear something if I think I'm going to be like worrying about it for the rest of the day, because I'm uncomfortable. And I don't know, maybe I'm just like, to me, shoulders are very like, I think I'd probably be more comfortable like showing cleavage than showing my shoulders. I guess it's just not something I've ever really done before.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. So the whole off the shoulder trend, it wasn't really something that I wished I could pull off,
but it was passed you by.
Yeah. I just knew it wasn't really for me. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Well, I feel like, I mean, I definitely feel the same way to some extent. I don't want to be uncomfortable. So, I mean, I won't wear like a very, I don't know what I won't wear. Like leather trousers, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Like something that I can't kind of move freely in. Mm-hmm. And high heels and things like that. But then the thing I'm not so interested in wearing those because I don't feel comfortable in them.
Yeah.
But what I do wish I could pull off is the color yellow.
No, okay.
I mean, like maybe a dark yellow. I recently bought a mustard suede skirt, which is a little bit more, but I love like lemony, sugary yellows and banana yellow, but they don't look right on me.
So is that just about that's a complexion color thing?
Yeah. I like red and I do like orange. Orange is a little bit trickier for me. Again, it has to be a darker or poppier orange than like kind of a sugary neon-y orange. But yeah, yellow is my white whale.
And do you, presumably you don't feel at peace about the fact that you can't pull off yellow?
I mean, I have to be at peace. Like, I can't keep buying yellow things. Like, I don't buy yellow stuff because I know. But often I'll see something yellow and I'll be like, ugh, I wish I could wear that, you know?
And have you ever thought, sold it, I'm just going to wear it anyway?
But
it doesn't matter.
It would make me look ill, you know? It would make me look very washed out. I'm very pale. I think my skin is like yellow toned rather than red toned anyway. So yeah, it's not for me.
Tomato red instead.
Yes.
I wish I could pull off anything involving boobs. I'm a 32 double F cup and the high street clothes aren't really made to accommodate that. And I either feel like pornographically revealing and just have men staring down my top, or I just literally can't get it on.
Is there an item of clothing I wish I could pull off, but don't think I can? Now, I'm going to come back to that question.
Up until recently, I thought that I couldn't pull off wearing velvet thigh-high boots that are heeled, but it turns out I can be and am that girl.
I've thought about this. I really wish I could pull off dresses. I can wear skirt suits, but I just cannot pull off a dress.
Because I had a boob job when I transitioned, I feel like androgyny is a look I really love. And I have actually bought bras that kind of minimise your boobs to try and do that. But that's one thing I slightly regret about having my boob job, because I love androgyny. I just think it's beautiful. And I think 14 years ago, it's kind of gone out of fashion. And I feel like it kind of came back in. And I do love that silhouette.
I've always wanted to be that kind of bohemian, raggedy edge, you know, that kind of wonderful early Comme des Garçons look, you know, kind of just to look like you've thrown something on or you've found it in a skip. I think I've always wanted to be that person, but unfortunately, I've always... I can't park with good shoes and, you know, I'm perennially drawn to tailoring.
I don't think there's anything that any of us can and can't pull off. I think it's a state of mind. Like, we can pull off anything we want to if we think we look like it looks fine on us. I think the problem is like wearing something and being embarrassed or nervous or whatever. The brain plays tricks on you, and I think you put out energetically what you feel. So if you feel like you look like shit in it, you look like shit in it.
That last response from Naomi Shimada is one of my favourites, I think. I really liked when we were at her house, and she was just quite dismissive of the question in a way that I really liked. And I think it's true that as long as you feel good in something, that's really all that should matter. And also the way that we phrase that question about not pulling something off makes it sound like, in a way, when it comes to style, there are rules. And
there are no rules.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. I think that's how I'm going to kind of I'm going to adopt her approach a little bit more and just remember to wear something if it's garish, as long as I like it.
So Stevie and I are both currently in the middle of a long and difficult process where we're both moving house. And it's kind of forcing us to examine our own wardrobe problems, I think, in terms of what we should throw away and what we should keep and how much stuff there seems to be. So we decided to enlist our friend Isabel to help us kind of examine where our biggest problem areas lie. Isabel?
Hi, I'm Isabel O'Carroll. I'm a content manager and freelance writer.
And a self-confessed serial hoarder and collector.
Yeah, incredibly so, yeah.
So this is like a self-help group of sorts. That's how I'm taking it.
We're all going to cry.
Problems.
So what's been your experience of buying, hoarding and throwing things away?
I've been a lifelong collector of precious things. And precious things can be anything from clothing to a scrap of my grandparents' wallpaper. When they changed their wallpaper, they were like, "We saved this. We knew you'd be really upset." And I was like, "Nothing must change.
Don't encourage me."
But I would like to say that pretty much the exact print turned up on a Chloe like dress.
No way.
Like, yeah, in maybe it was like early millennium. So I was just like, "See?"
Wow.
You just need any excuse to validate your behaviour. Exactly.
You need to be like a textile consultant.
I know. But yeah, I have always been very hoardery. I was actually looking through family photos recently, and everything I was wearing, I was like, I love those shoes. I love that coat. I think I'm just really emotionally connected to clothing in a way that maybe most people aren't. Mm-hmm. My sister once said to me, it's really easy. All you have to do is just get rid of your stuff and then you forget about it. And I was like, that's not how I think about it. It haunts my dreams. Yeah. So that's my experience.
Have you ever got rid of anything and not thought about it? Like, has there been an occasion where that hasn't been the case?
Not really. I mean, also what I do to myself, which if you're a seasoned hoarder, I think you're probably familiar with, is that thing where you put it away under your bed and then you're like, and then in 6 months' time, I probably won't even. But what actually happens, you're like, oh my God, I really needed that. So there's never any, like, I can't believe, oh, it was very important, actually. So, I don't know. I think people are just wired differently.
This is definitely making me feel like my situation isn't as bad, because I do that thing of putting things in a black plastic bag and then putting it in the cupboard. And then I'm like, 6 months later, and maybe there's like one garment in a bag that I'm like, oh, thank God I have this back. But the rest, I'm like, no, time to go.
Yeah. And sometimes also, because I do that as well, putting things away and just totally forgetting what's even inside the box until I open it up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also have found, because I've got quite big hoarding tendencies, and I remember being given a coat by like one of my auntie's friends who was very glamorous and had this amazing Valentino red leather coat. When I was like 13, maybe I got it, and I didn't really like it at the time, but I held on to it, and now I wear it and I absolutely love it, and I honestly held on to it for about 6 years before I even wore it. So that's always the thing that I can justify my hoarding.
It's like an investment. Like, sometimes the returns grow over time, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But I shouldn't say that, because that's going to enable all of us.
Dr. Anna!
It's so true. But I think there's something really interesting in the idea of, I remember when I was doing my art degree, the idea of collecting and memorialization and kind of like extending your physical self out into the world, and kind of like, I think Freud thought it was something to do with like not being able to accept death. So it's that thing of like, I have so many things, I'm here, I'm real. And but also the idea of like letting go. I hate letting go of things. I don't want anything to change. I want everyone to be best friends. I think there's like mental, I don't know if you guys feel like that similar kind of.
Well, I think often this is really making me think a lot about my own hoarding now, because my hoarding is often born out of like a fear that I need this thing for a practical purpose. Mm-hmm. So like, I have like a large number of coats.
How many?
Over 10.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
But like,
Would 20 be fine as well, though?
I think 15 is pushing it.
I think it's probably close
but
to 15.
But I think 10 is...
Coats and jackets, it's definitely at 15.
Jackets is like... Sometimes that's not strictly outerwear.
Yeah.
No, they're all definitely outerwear. And I'm always looking for a new coat as well, is the problem.
Coats are so important,
but that's
though.
The thing. I can't wear any other way because I'm like, well, that's the coat I wear when I'm going to the theatre. And that's the coat I'm wearing when it's snowing.
Oh, my God. And this is the coat that I wear when I go to a winter wedding.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the coat I wear for the doctor.
But we talked about this before. Like, a coat does pull things together. It does. God, we're really enabling each other,
aren't we? Coats are fine. Let's move on.
What else? So, with your house move and with your packing up, Anna, has there been anything in particular that you've really undernarred over or anything that you found easier to get rid of than you expected?
Well, we had a conversation last week where we were both talking about our hoarding tendencies, and I said that I think if you want to love precious things, as Isabel said, you need to be hardline about certain things. So you need to have the ability to throw stuff away if you want to also accumulate lots of crap. Like, I think that's just the trade-off. And that's fine because I'm quite a disciplined person and I can somehow manage that. So I have been bagging stuff up quite freely. Mm. There are things like, I had a series of beautiful designer woolen jumpers that all got shrunk in the wash. And I'm kind of like, maybe if I just like stretch them a little bit more, but I've just thrown them in the bin. Oh,
really? Because I was just like, you know, you can soak them in conditioner and pull them out.
Oh, don't
and
tell.
Then, and then the other part of me was like, oh, you can felt them even more and make them into a cushion. Like, it's like a weird... like script that's just like, don't
kind of cutting off the arms and turning them into leg warmers. Yeah. Or something.
The thing is, like, if I was going to do any of those things, I would have done them by now because they've been shrinking for like 4 years and I don't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
So I think I just need to be like militant about it.
And realistic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing about moving house, is that you have the time pressure of just having to sort of make decisions leaving by this point. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
What about your move, Stevie?
Well, I actually was quite inspired by a conversation that we had last week. You were just very, you know, I'm not going to say as far as Marie Kondo, but you were just like, just do it. I was like, oh God, okay, maybe I'm making a big deal. So anyway, I've created quite a few bags of things to take to the charity shop, and also quite a lot of things I need to take to like a fabric recycling bank or something. I think I'd got to a stage of maybe taking lots of different clothes around with me from house to house and putting off that decision every time I move, which I've done quite a lot in the last 2 years. I've done it about five times in the last two years. So I've made decisions about those things that have been hanging over me. And then because I'm also putting a load of stuff in storage, I've decided that anything else that I'm not sure about, I will defer the decision till later.
Yeah.
But I feel like I would quite like to be liberated of just anything that's hanging over me, but I'm still not quite there yet.
Yeah, the liberation is really strong, because I moved into my flat last year and I am only just really starting to like get rid of stuff, like eBaying stuff. And I would say, having been the kind of strong voice of hoarding throughout this conversation, there's something really nice about getting older and knowing more who you are, because I think for me part of the hoarding is, but if I get rid of these, like, this is a serious item, if I get rid of these ruffle Victorian culottes, then how can I be the person who might wear that on a summer's like
totally,
there are so many avenues and possibilities that clothes, and then I feel like when I'm getting rid of those, I'm shutting down possibilities for myself.
Totally. I think that really sounds familiar to me. So shall I pull out the really disgusting snakeskin shirt that I'm trying to make a decision about?
I mean, I've already seen it on the internet and I said, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so you're one of the many enablers. So I posted this item, like, in a way, sort of as a way of letting it go.
Yeah.
So it's quite, I mean, I feel like in a way, so it's a pink short-sleeved, quite polyester-y shirt in a lurid snakeskin pattern, bright pink.
It's quite mid-series Sex and the City.
So that is going to enable me. Whereas I am trying to tell myself it might also be the sort of thing that like a really ill-advised man would wear to a rave in the 90s with like a chunky chain.
There is something slightly European football shirt about it's quite it, but I like that.
Also going to enable me. Love it. Okay.
I don't love it, I have to say.
No, I don't think it's for you, Anna.
But the thing is, I think what you should ask yourself is, if you saw this in whatever high street shop of your choice tomorrow, would you buy it?
I probably wouldn't. No, I wouldn't wear it.
I think you have to get rid of it.
Oh, but it could be a version of myself.
That's a really strong... Mm. Yeah.
This is the thing.
I love it. I love it. I think it's so hideous. And if I owned it, but like in a really good way.
Yeah, exactly. It's ugly.
But if I owned it, I think I would pull it out all the time and be like, this is amazing, and then never wear it.
Yeah.
And then be like, but I can't Yeah.
Toss it.
I think you're right, Anna. But I just want to say my piece so I can at least, you know, let go. I think the reason I want to wear it is because I feel like I want to be that person that like waltzes into a room wearing something that everyone is like, oh my God, she's really pulled that off. And I feel like I'm wearing a lot of things at the moment, which I'm just getting dressed in the morning and like putting on a white shirt and white trousers because that's what I wear all the time. There's no challenge. And like, yeah, where's the sort of excitement and fun and risk taking with fashion?
Can you transfer all of those feelings onto like a mid challenge piece?
Yeah.
That's like semi challengey. Yeah. And then every time you wear the mid challengey piece, you can think like, RIP snakeskin shirt, you're with the angels now.
Or you could really just toss it and move on.
Oh my God, Anna, you're so
harsh. Anna, where did you get this conviction from?
I think, as I said, I think if you want to love nice things, and if you, like, I buy so many books and so many records and so many secondhand pieces of clothing, that if I want to keep doing that, I only have a limited space in my life. I have to throw stuff out.
Did you... I'm wondering how much families play a part in this in terms of upbringing. So let's go back. Stevie. But like, I think that maybe my family, we place quite a lot of sentiment on objects. And I mean, different family members are like, my mum is quite good at getting rid of things every now and then. But there'll be things that like, there's been a famous mistake that's been made about like taking a load of books to a charity shop and then years of regret about that. So I think that I have always wanted to err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
But I wonder what you guys...
I moved house quite a lot as a child until I was about 8. And then I was in the same house for the rest of my childhood. But I think, and like we moved from London to Dublin and there was that idea of like, you do have to pack everything up, you know? I mean, obviously I was a child, I wasn't exactly packing up wardrobes and stuff, but...
But yeah, that idea of you can't take it all with you.
Yeah, like there is a practical... And like if you want to have your lovely things, then you can't have boxes and boxes and boxes of your not so lovely things.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you both where you stand on passing on items of clothing to friends, because I know some people that makes them feel uncomfortable. Because
I love it.
Some people, me, really.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't like offer up a bag and say go through if there's anything you want in there, and then see your friend wearing your skirt and be like, I made the wrong decision.
I have. So one of my old flatmates when I used to live in a shared house, my flatmate Eugenie, I was like, I'm taking this to the charity shop, have a look. And then I'd see her walking around in my clothes and I'd be like, oh, thank God. Because it was like, I knew that someone was taking care of them.
But was that because it was also still within your sight and you could still see the item? So
well, even if
gone.
I didn't see it, I knew that she was kind of making the most of it. And I think so in some weird way, it's like the idea that someone might not care for those things as much as I cared for them. Mm. I feel like there's so much psychology in all this. It's so weird. Like I've been thinking about it my whole life because I'm obsessed with, like I'm not a happy hoarder. I'm like, I wish I was a minimalist. So I think about it a lot.
Have you ever brought something to a charity shop and then seen it in the window of the charity shop and thought, ooh, I want to buy that?
Realising that it was yours?
Like, yeah. Like, if it takes me a second. I think it was something that had a really beautiful print, but, like, I just didn't wear it or it didn't suit me or it wasn't in great condition or something, so I brought it. And then was like, I love that print, you know? And I was like,
also, the window, that must have been a premium item.
Well, mid-premium.
Yeah.
Oversaturation of charity shops in the area, maybe.
Mm. But yeah, it's funny what you were saying about families. My dad is so minimalist. I don't even think he owns any records. Or he owns very few books. He's very just like, I don't know. Yeah, he's very, very minimalist. He's genuinely what I would call OCD and not just like tidiness masquerading as OCD. But then I wonder about my grandparents who grew up in the war and like lived in an occupied country and were very frugal with everything, if that was passed down to me more than like my dad's minimalism, because they kept everything and they like would never have any leftovers and stuff like that. And I think that I have much more that mentality than my dad's mentality.
That's funny. And also I think that sometimes older relatives create a home in a way that I always find that idea of home is sometimes elusive to me, you know, being I'm still in my 20s and moving around and renting places. And this idea of like having things that create coziness or a sort of haven.
Yeah.
And so often stuff plays into that. And so when you're talking about your grandparents, to me, that idea is quite familiar of like a warm house that I'd go to visit that my grandparents lived in. And wanting to recreate that, and sometimes
my grandparents' home feels more like home than my parents' home. Mm. So that, because they have all these like amazing treasures. Dangerous word, but
I still think we're back on the enabling.
So bad.
So I think that maybe what I need to do going forward is like not share things on Instagram. I need to just directly speak to Anna.
Yeah.
I will provide the black bag. I will hold it open while you toss the stuff.
That's what you need, isn't it? I think that, and I always used to need that on clear outs. I remember my mum just standing there with a black bag, being like, come on. And me being like, I know you're right.
Yeah. A little bit of external forces, I think.
Yeah.
So my sister used to do, because I've always been really messy, my sister used to come and help me. So she'd sit in my room on my bed when we were teenagers. And if I ever started to be like, oh, memories, she would start singing Christina Aguilera. She's a really good singer. So she'd be like, I'm a genie. And I'd be like, all right. And it was just really like, we had this thing where she'd come and like,
sit maybe you need that back in.
I mean, she still comes round sometimes. I'm like, me, I'm tidying my room. Can you come and help me?
So are there, because it sounds like you are a bit of a sort of begrudge hoarder and you would rather be free.
Yeah.
Are there any sort of resolutions going forward or things that you want to try and change to tip the balance a little bit more?
Yeah. Well, definitely something that helps me is always thinking, if I saw this in a shop, would I make an effort to go and buy it? And that helps me rationalize, like, okay, come on. That helps me get into a better mindset than like super hoarding. Also, interestingly, like, me and my boyfriend have been having a lot of conversations about moving in together, and I know that I have to have less stuff if he's going to move into my flat or if we're going to move into a flat together. So that's definitely something that I'm just like, and also just from a basic level of like, your life will be so much easier if you don't have 600 million things. Like, yes. I think having less time and becoming more and more fed up with
stuff,
wading through stuff.
Yeah, that's the way I see it.
I always think that George Clooney film Up in the Air, where he describes like, imagine your life and now put it in a backpack, and he's like a frequent flyer who just doesn't have any emotional attachments to anything. I always think like, that is the goal. I mean, not to be that much of a like stuff fascist, but the idea of being able to move freely with your possessions, I think, is
very, very liberating.
But also I feel like that is kind of could be a question of privilege. Like, if you believe that you are lucky enough or fortunate enough that the stuff that you need will always come into your life
and you can replace anything,
then it's easier to let stuff go.
That's true. Like, I was having a conversation this week about holding on to a massive box of coat hangers, because I was like, coat hangers are surprisingly expensive to buy the nice ones, so it is sometimes about money and being able to store things.
I actually bought velvet coat hangers and it's changed my life because it's so nice and they're all matching. And then I had this box of coat hangers and I tried to free cycle them and I was like, I don't want to put them in the bin. I hate waste as well, so that makes it really hard. And then Alex, my boyfriend, was just like, he called trade, he was like, I'm going into Peckham anyway, took them to trade, they were gone. And I was just like, oh, my hero. It was like, that decisiveness is so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, right,
thank you very much, Isabel.
That's okay.
I'm Levi Palmer.
And I'm Matthew Harding.
And we're two designers who are behind the label Palmer Harding. Our label's based around focusing on women's shirting. We started our brand in 2011 with a capsule collection of 17 white shirts, and we've sort of grown the brand from there.
We started focusing our business around the white shirt for a number of reasons, one of which was we were poor, and so buying a roll of white cotton was something we could do and like using our skills to kind of sort of how can we maximize this one thing. But also maybe from a business perspective, we were seeing a lot of our contemporaries graduating from St. Martin's, starting these like cocktail dress collections, and it kind of felt a bit staid and a bit kind of, we didn't know that woman who was going to so many parties. So we kind of I think something that's evolved, and it's only really now we're able to label it, but we were kind of interested in the idea of dressing a woman like from 11 o'clock in the morning, and in a shirt. Shirt has that capacity, and I think it's also a really interesting garment that has a lot of dualities. And me and Levi have quite different design styles, and so a shirt, something that already has quite, like, you know, it's very masculine, but you can push it into something quite feminine. And so it was having that, being able to play with those dualities. And also, I mean, we saw, again, young businesses being kind of pigeonholed for what they do. So we're like, well, the press advisors are going to want to put us in a box, so let's define our own box and make sure it's something we have room to play in. It's been smooth sailing. No, not at all.
I think the challenges that we've faced as we've grown is maybe creatively, like, how do you find creative fulfillment when you're constantly reinventing the same thing? That's a challenge. It's not a bad challenge. It was something that, it's something that we still are constantly have to question each season. Like, does this feel new? Does this feel relevant? Does it tick all the boxes of our consumer? Like, what she wants to wear, you know, which is like comfort, confidence, style. But, you know, as a creative, instinctually, you don't want to be put in a cage. And we sort of built this nice cage, and that's actually provided us a lot of opportunity to challenge those barriers that we've set up for ourselves. But it does, for me, I think it does sometimes get frustrating. Like, okay, I have this great drape, but when you put a button stand through it and a collar stand and sleeves, it changes the element of the drape and doesn't necessarily become the same creative thing that you saw. But then also that means that it wouldn't be right for our brand. So there's those, for me, there's those
creative challenges. I think something I've always enjoyed since when I was a student at St. Martin's is having parameters of kind of like, you have to make something. Like, it's like challenges on like Drag Race or something like that. Make this dress out of a cardboard box. You know, it's kind of, having those limitations, I think, is quite it is frustrating sometimes, but it is also an exciting challenge. Rather than if everything's possible, it kind of, I don't know, it loses something to me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we were studying and you would see the really wealthy kids at St. Martin's who had no limitations on budgets and resources, and their graduate collections were always the most, like, not always, but most of the time the most disjointed ones that didn't have a clear concept because they could go in any direction. Whereas, like,
I remember my graduate collection from the MA, like, the majority of the fabric was £4 a metre mesh from Shepherd's Bush. And I remember really thinking, and I made something I thought was really beautiful. And I remember thinking that how more fantastic it is to make something beautiful out of something really cheap and nasty, rather than like, oh, here's this like £40 a metre silk.
And I had this couture seamstress sew it for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. So, like, in a way, there's been lots of challenges, but it's kind of those challenges that make it interesting.
Actually, those challenges have defined our labels. So I think that's what's quite good.
The tricky thing is, look, because our business has been growing quite rapidly over the last 2 years, and so we won £100,000, which is a lot of money. But when you're then spending £300,000 on production, it's like, very all of a sudden not a huge, it is a lot of money, but it's kind of, you don't see it as, it's not like it's sitting there in your account. It goes quite quickly, but then obviously, like, the things we were able to spend on was staff, mostly, like, you know, being able to hire an experienced production manager. We at the time we were planning on hiring a production manager, but the fund gave us the confidence and the money to be able to kind of say, okay, well, actually we can have someone who's got 8 years experience rather than 4 years experience. And just having that expertise has completely changed our business. Sometimes it's very frustrating for all of us, but we all know it's like one of those frustrations that we need to go through to get the business to the next level. So really, like, the support network or support team that we've been able to build because of the fund has changed our business. This time last year, there was
Still five.
No, there's four of us.
No, you...
five of us, yeah. Sorry. There's five of us, and now there's... We're doing a trial day, say, with someone, and if that works out, there's 14 of us.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
It's almost tripled in a year.
Which is really scary. Like, I remember seeing other young brands growing really quickly and thinking, that's too fast. You can't... You've got to be really careful. And, like, I feel like we have been careful. We're not over high. Like, everyone has a purpose. But equally, I remember for the longest time when it was just me and Levi thinking, we used to say all the time, like, oh, what kind of size of business should we, like, what's our dream? And we were like, well, 15 people would be enough. Like, then it's like, you know everyone, and it's like enough people to get everything done. And it's like, oh, we're one person away from that. And I don't know if that's right
and
anymore.
Like, I can still see an opportunity for at least four other people immediately in my head, you know?
Levi in general is much more fluid and
maybe dramatic as well, do you think?
Maybe. I don't know if it's dramatic to write works. I think we both have our drama in design.
Mm.
But I think it's more fluid and a bit more romantic, whereas I'm more structured. And so in general, although we've had... It always feels like it's a different process every season almost. But in general, Levi will drape some ideas and then we'll talk about them and then I'll sketch them up and then we'll develop them together verbally and then I'll kind of like develop like 10 options or something like that. So it's become more and more symbiotic, though.
Yeah, but I mean, we didn't, in the beginning when we were working together, because, well, a lot of brands that are duos had worked together at university, so they found their stride, like they found their working methods when they weren't starting a business, and they went into starting a business and they worked well together, like Marcus Almeida. For us, we were together in university, but we never worked together in university. We maybe like helped each other, but we weren't like it.
Yeah, we helped each other on each other's projects, but never on the same project.
Yeah, there was always one person leading it. So the first couple of years, I'd say the first 3 years really, it was always a struggle for me and Matthew to understand how to creatively work together because we hadn't found that stride. And because of the pressures of the industry, it took us more than a season to develop. Because when you're at school, if you make a mistake, it's like, oh, well, that was a bad project. But in real life, if you make a mistake, it's like, oh, well, there goes my business. So it took us a while to really understand that. And I think when we found that stride of like, let's work more symbiotically, or this is how we work more symbiotically, that's when our business really started to take off.
Mm.
And we started to see a lot of strength in our brand and in our retail, our consumer offering, a lot of commerciality, but also excitement. And that was quite, I think, a good moment for the brand because that's when we really, started to build what we are today.
Mm. Well, our collections are kind of, we think of, it's like, it's a revolution, no, evolution, not a revolution. So, recently we've been pushing for more and more newness. Autumn winter, there's a lot more development than we've done previously, but that's only because we finally had the time to be able to do that really. But there's always kind of things we look at, kind of one, what worked in terms of wholesale, because something could be really popular wholesale, but then also then looking at sell-through reports and looking actually at what the consumer liked. And there's always some surprise of things that people like wholesale did really well but didn't do so well retail, and things that people didn't pick up enough wholesale then sells out straight away, and then everyone's like clamoring for our e-commerce to kind of replenish. So it's always smart to look at that data and understand what a woman wants, and it kind of helps us more and more build up a picture of who she is, what she's doing, where we're dressing for. Like, there was a one of our more commercial dresses that our designer assistant was working on this the other day. And Levi commented on it saying, she needs to be able to go pick up the kids in this dress. This is her, like, shopping. She's going to the to pick up groceries. She's going to the pick up kids like after work, and she's kind of maybe she's going out straight up to dinner with someone afterwards or something. But she's in that process. She needs to be wearing that dress here, and it's kind
and
of
that was direct feedback from a retailer about it. It's like yeah. when they bought repurchased the dress another season when they're like, could we get a recut of this dress?
Because our woman's a working woman, like she's someone who's like maybe she's self-employed or maybe she runs a business or she works in a business, but she's someone who's in charge. She needs to be able to flip between her different lives, if that makes sense. Like between her work and family. And yeah, it's kind of understanding more of that woman has been really helpful. I think when you're a student, you don't think about these things at all.
No.
And you just think like, this is wonderful looking, like that's enough.
Yeah, and as a student, they always tell you like, who's your muse? Who's your woman? And you like, you instantly go to Tilda Swinton because that's where everyone goes to as a fashion student. They never would tell you like, and what does Tilda do at 9:30 in the morning? That way, yeah. How does she need to dress at 9:30 in the morning? You know, like, yes, she looks great on those red carpets and Haider Ackermann, but like, what's
or
she doing?
Or an editorial.
Or an editorial. But what is she doing on the way to that? And when you see her, like, she's normally in this big, slouchy, oversized shirt and like, baggy trousers, and she looks cool, but you know, she's working, like she's doing something. I mean, maybe she's not working, maybe she's just sitting around reading scripts and wants to be comfortable, but that's still work for her, and she needs that wardrobe to fulfill that part of her life.
I mean, like, the fantasy of fashion is fantastic, but I think we're really enjoying the idea of taking the boring elements of life and giving those a bit of fantasy in our designs, because I mean, even like a lot of our shirts are kind of not understandable, but like our best selling shirt's a shirt that's got like 4 meters of fabric in it. It's almost to the floor. It's dramatic, but you understand that it's a shirt. And so to me, it's kind of like, I love the idea of someone like Tilda Swinton reading her script with her coffee in the morning at 11 o'clock in the morning with this huge shirt draped over the sofa. Like that brings life to that moment, not just dressing for this red carpet thing or this cocktail event or this office party or whatever it is these different women have in their lives that they wear that cocktail dress for, which everyone's obsessed with. But it's almost like fashion, I mean, and it's true in terms of like the journalists we speak to. I think people, and I think it's something that people have struggled with our brand somewhat, like in terms of the press, is the idea that I think a lot of people still think of fashion is event wear.
Impracticality.
And that now there's more this idea of streetwear can be fashion, but what we do, I don't think people, there's some people who don't necessarily see it in the same vein as that. I mean, it's a style.
Yeah, you know, I think there's still the, like, you know, I don't like the term, but that's what we get labeled a lot is workwear.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and that, you know, instantly you think of a dowdy two-piece suit in woman in the office.
But it is like, workwear. But
we're putting excitement into it, you know, and I think we're really revolutionizing what workwear is. And yes, of course, not everything fits into that workwear category that we do. There's elements like our super shirt that you can wear to events. There's elements that you can wear, you know, shopping for groceries, you know, on the weekend or anything really, because a white shirt's so versatile. But ultimately we're designing for that woman who has to get things done, and not necessarily, you know, even if she's not a working woman, if she's a housewife like and is taking care of her kids and has a, you know, social responsibilities that she wants to live up to, like she still has an agenda and she kind of defines her life by that agenda, I think, and wants to make sure that she can accomplish her goals in a nice wardrobe, not in a dowdy two-piece suit, you know?
You can buy Palmer Harding online at palmerharding.com, and you can also follow them on Instagram at Palmer Harding.
Do you think that conviction is something that improves with age?
I hope so. I think so because in every other area of the way I look at myself and the way I feel about myself and how I look and all that, that has improved with age so far. And I do think, like what we were talking about earlier, about knowing what we're not comfortable in and what we're thus not interested in, that's something that definitely improves with age, because you know more, you get more stubborn, you know what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah, totally. Although maybe as you get older, you'll embrace leather trousers.
I doubt it. Unless they're like sweatpants.
Yeah. Leather sweatpants.
I think Kanye has worn them.
How about those moments when you feel like you lose your style mojo? Like, are there certain things that you do to get it back?
I wish there was. I tend to just hide until I feel better again. Kind of just chalk it up to it being a bad day and let it play out. But I do hope that the further I get into my own closet organizing and the better I get at shopping, the less mojo I will be able to lose.
Mm.
I think, like, for me, I live my life in pursuit of this perfect closet where I thus don't have any problems with the way I get dressed and, you know, those days where you just don't know what to wear and all that. But I think the perfect closet is like a goal that shifts endlessly. But at the same time, I am trying to get closer and closer with every purchase and each goal. What about you?
I mean, that really, like, that resonates in terms of this idea of having the ideal wardrobe. I guess everyone does.
Yeah, it's foolproof.
Yeah, and I don't, and also, like, I just don't know if it's possible, because as you say, things change. You go through phases of maybe I don't know, like wanting to wear one thing more than others and keeping things in boxes for a while. That's certainly how I do it. But anyway, I guess when I have lost my mojo, there are books that I refer to. And and just saying this is a reminder that I haven't done this in a while, and I kind of want to pull these books back out. But there are three of them. They're all about style, but particularly about individualism and thriftiness. And I find that hearing these stories about how people do things differently helps me to appreciate my own tastes and to follow what feels good rather than what looks good or what's in style. And sometimes I look at Instagram, but as I've said before, that just makes me want to dress like other people rather than myself.
Yes.
So these books encourage, I think, a love of clothing regardless of income, which I think is something that I personally find really important to remember.
If it becomes really personal, then it's not so much about trend.
Totally, yeah. And it's about, it's just about like purely expressing yourself, which is really what it all comes down to with style. And I think that maybe that's what, when you lose a sense of conviction, you need reminding of.
I'm gonna write that on the inside of my wardrobe door, maybe.
Well, write this quote on the inside of your wardrobe door, because this is a quote from one of the books. The book is called Cheap Chic: Hundreds of Money Saving Tips to Create Your Own Great Look, which is like one of the best titles ever. It's by Catherine Millionaire and Carol Troy, and the quote is: "Remember, style is 5% investment and 95% illusion."
There's a lot in that. That's
a good
quote.
How good is that? It really is. And it's just, I think it's definitely one to have written on a post-it note. And then the other two books are The Cheap Date Guide to Style by Bea Garnett and Kira Jolliffe, which I think is a bit of a classic.
Yes.
And also Women in Clothes, which you feature in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a great book for, definitely when you lose your style mojo, just picking it up at a random place. And it can kind of, or in my experience, I think it kind of reminds you what it is that you love about clothing just by looking at what it is other people love about clothing, which might not be the same as you, but I think it puts things into perspective, this perspective that you can definitely lose when you look at Instagram for all your fashion content.
Yeah, totally. I think it's about sort of rebooting a little bit sometimes and stepping away and even just going through what you own and looking at old photos as well, I find is helpful. Like, even just from the last 6 months, like, what did I wear last time I went out for dinner and feel really good in?
Yeah, going into your own archives.
Yeah.
Like it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Production is by Lucy Dearlove. This was the final episode in our current run, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about everything that we've done so far. Email us at layerspodcast@gmail.com or Instagram DM us at layers.podcast, where we regularly post your missives in our stories.
Before season 2 comes, look out for more mini episodes or postcards from us throughout the summer. Follow us on Twitter at layerspodcast or on Instagram for a heads up.
Before we go, we'll leave you with Loved and Lost, our regular spot about items of clothes that have gone astray. This time, we're hearing from Stevie about the road not taken.
The dress was black in, I think, a lightly ribbed knit. It had a flattering skater skirt which stopped halfway down my thighs and sleeves just above the elbows. I felt very chic in this dress because I was 19 and it made me feel womanly. It was the sort of dress that gave an eye-catching twirl with even the smallest turn of the hips. And it skimmed my body and showed off my legs, which were my favourite part of me. I would wear it with my wedge espadrilles and the basket I carried around, trying to look like Jane Birkin. I loved this dress, but I didn't buy it. Why didn't I buy it? I gazed at my reflection as I tried it on. I even got my friend to take a picture, on my film camera, true love. All the surefire signs of changing room love were there, but I didn't buy it. It was £80 after all. That was my last summer before university, and along with trips to John Lewis, I was getting all sorts of advice from older relatives. Mum made me watch The Big Chill. Someone else urged me to approach my crushes instead of drifting around wondering what if forevermore. I imagined myself boldly marching up to boys in coffee shops. I wish, though, I'd learnt about the price of a perfect dress. Once in a blue moon, I think fondly of that cute American saxophonist I was shy around, but I think about that dress far, far more. Sometimes I still search for it on eBay. I type in black knit cos dress, always grasping at the diminishing hope that I might find it amongst those really strange cosplay outfits that always slip through the filters. But it wasn't meant to be. Instead, it's taken on that mythical identity of the one that got away. Like an imagined romance, I long for the dress's good points, not thinking about how it might really be. It's not really about that, though. Remembering that dress makes me think about what my 19-year-old self imagined for future me. Who I was when I tried it on. It reminds me to beat myself up a little less about what I haven't done, because old me would probably be chuffed to bits with what I have. I genuinely think I have things to learn from my 19-year-old self, with all her Clairol hair dyeing kits, Francophile charity shop finds, and utter devotion to blogging, without worrying so much about what people think of your words once you've pressed post. I still long for that dress, or a version of it. Looking at that photograph has made the longing stronger still for the item, but I think also for the pure optimism of that summer. I didn't get the dress, but it doesn't mean that version of myself is lost. I think we can bring back parts of our old selves whenever we like.